Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumcloom Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. Lumcloomenergy.com. Have your say. Call 0818 300 103. Text or WhatsApp your Saturday View to 083 3010 103.
Hello and a very good morning. Ronan Berry here. Time for you to have your Saturday View. And what else can I say but May the 4th be with you. Yes, the 4th of May already, bank holiday weekend, but lots happening over the past number of days and lots to update you on this morning's show, including why lots of local people are taking their kit off and getting photographed doing so, and doing so in public on a stage as well. So find out about a little bit later on what is behind that and the fantastic initiative behind it too. Also, again yesterday, another protest outside the house of Taoiseach Simon Harris at a time where he wasn't present. He was up in Belfast meeting ministers from the Stormont Assembly up there, but also at a time when his wife was at home putting their young kids to bed. Completely out of order, largely and widely condemned by pretty much everybody across the political spectrum, and rightly so, and it's a bridge too far. But what are we going to do to try and stop that and prevent it? It's not something that happened hugely in the past, but it's happening more and more common now. And it's not the first time Simon Harris's house has been the target of a protest, and many other TDs now are added to that list of having their homes used as a place to stage a protest. Right or wrong, let me know what you think. 083 3010 103, the text and WhatsApp line, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota on the Arden Road in Tullamore. I'm also going to look at age gaps in relationships, and it has become a theme in a number of movies, particularly a few released last year, and a new one called The Idea of You that's only out, I think, in the last couple of weeks. And it's apparently a biopic of Harry Styles, formerly of One Direction and now a global superstar in his own right. And it talks about it. It documents and shows the story of an age gap based on a novel between 40-year-old Anne Hathaway, as the character she's played as 40-year-old, and another character who is 24 years of age. And apparently it has raised a couple of eyebrows given the perceived age gap. And it asks a bigger question, that do we look at the age gap differently when the female is the older person in relationship? And one listener has texted in already to say about Emmanuel Macron. Of course, his wife, I think, was his former teacher in school, and there's quite a significant age gap there. But it does, and you can probably have numerous examples of this. If the woman is older, she can often be perceived as a cougar. There can be something else, you know, intimated at. There's underlying things, maybe why was an older woman going for a younger man? But if it's turned the other way around, nobody bats an eyelid, apparently. And the man is just called a man. And it's almost seen as a high five moment and something to do. Now, other movies released last year kind of paint age gaps slightly differently. Some movies like are talking about age gaps where, in particular, maybe one person relationship is quite young, or indeed very young when they first met the other partner, and that different issue entirely, opens up whole reams of stories around grooming and what's right, what's wrong, legalities, and how we protect our children, particularly, again, so much lately we hear of how we need to protect children with mobile phones. I know as a parent of a child who is getting close to confirmation age, I hear so many parents talking about the dreaded confirmation, because that's when now most kids expect to get their very first mobile phone. Lots have them already. Recent research says that 5-6-year-olds, quite a few of them, like 20-25%, have mobile phones already. But for a lot of kids at present, confirmation is seen as that kind of milestone. And I think majority of parents absolutely dread that situation, because it's almost like you really are letting them out loose into a world that you can't control. And even as best you try to control it, it's difficult to do so. So coming back to that thing around age gaps then in movies, why do we do that? Why is the woman always classed and given titles if she's seen to be a lot older than the male person in the relationship as well? Let me know if you are in a relationship with an age gap like that. Let us know. Tell us how you met. Tell us how long you're together and what that age gap is. And we'll give you a shout out on air too. So lots to get through this morning, but going to start on a very serious issue. And it is something that you have been texting in your droves for as long as I can remember on this radio station. It keeps popping its head up. It's been covered by many politicians, by many of you, with your own personal stories and by you know, and it's been featured in so many pieces of research, in reports, on national media, local media as well. And it's down to what's been described by Brian Stanley at Sinn Féin TD for Laois Offaly as a shockingly low number of GPs in relation to the population of Laois and Offaly. And he made this point to Taoiseach Simon Harris recently. And I must point out, in Dáil Éireann, as he's supposed to, not outside his house. But very good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Ronan, and good morning to your listeners.
Brian, can you take us through some of these numbers? You have kind of stats and kind of what they recommend the number of GPs per head of population is, and versus what the current situation is in Laois and Offaly.
Well, look, a lot of people across, particularly Laois Offaly, will be familiar with this because they come face to face with it in terms of trying to access GP practice, trying to get an appointment with your doctor. And indeed, some people don't, you know, have difficulty even getting signed up in a practice. And that goes for private patients and public patients. People who are medical card holders, the HSE will connect them up with a GP. People who don't have a medical card, it becomes extremely difficult for them. And an awful lot of, you know, unfortunately, an awful lot of working families, people caught in the middle category, don't have a medical card. But which or whether, it's affecting everybody. And there's a recommendation generally across the developed world of around 1,000 1,000 population per each GP. So in other words, it should be a GP for every 1,000 people. So if you think about your own town or village or whatever, and think of the catchment area around it, and so the larger towns, obviously, you would need multiples of that because of the expanding population. But what you have a situation in Offaly that where we only have a GP per every 2,683 people, according to the HSE, and in Laois, 2,483 people per GP. So, you know, it's clear that we have, you know, we have 2.5 times the number of people per GP that we should have. And that manifests itself when people, as I said, go to sign up to a GP practice. The GP practice is the front line. And it feeds into another thing as well, Ronan, in this country, that, you know, if you go to other European countries and other developed countries across the world, from what we can figure out, and we can see it in our closest neighbours in Europe, Northern Europe, is that the GP practice, the primary care services, is where most health services are provided. What happens here? People in, be it in Tullamore, be it in Port Laois, be it in Mount Mellick, Rathdowney, wherever else, they can't get into a GP practice. They're waiting for weeks or whatever to get an appointment. So what do? To get their illness increases, and they finish up in the accident and emergency unit of Port Laois or Tullamore Hospital. And this in turn is clogging up the hospitals. Constituents say to me that they need to see a doctor, and the only way they could actually get to see one is to go up and sit in an emergency department in either of the two main hospitals here in Laois Offaly, near Port Laois or Tullamore. And that's creating its own set of problems. And on top of that as well, what compounds it is that the range of services in GP practices, where there's some changes in that, we don't have those big primary care centres that we need. I mean, Port Laois is without one. I've raised it. I know our local candidates and local councillors are raising it, Sinn Féin councillors are raising it, the need for a primary care centre. And we need to, so there's a number of other services should be provided there, such as dental, such as physiotherapy, occupational therapy, nursing services. There's a whole range of services that can be provided in the community without ever getting people into an acute hospital, where it's far more expensive, creates all sorts of difficulties. The difficulties in our A&E units across the country is well rehearsed, and yourselves and other media outlets cover it very well. But we have to try and break that. One of the ways, sure, there's a capacity issue in the hospitals themselves, and we need to increase capacity. And University of Limerick Hospital is a case in point. But it's a problem in all hospitals. But we also need to actually prevent a situation where people have to go to the hospital to get basic medical treatment.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Limerick Hospital, and even, you know, I know some listeners have often texted in and told us that people from Limerick and those and that catchment area are actually travelling to the Midlands because they know they probably won't get seen in Limerick, so that exacerbates the problem. But if we look at what's causing the shortage, retirement is often put out there. Lots of GPs are getting older. Are we not getting the flow of graduates from college to take these positions? What's the primary factors? Undoubtedly, immigration and emigration play a role. So emigration in terms of are Irish GPs going further afield for better terms and conditions and a better lifestyle? Or is immigration actually causing a problem? Or is it just one of these handy sticks to kind of beat people with as well?
Well, on a positive note, the HSE recruited a number of doctors from South Africa last year. A number of GPs were encouraged to come in, and indeed in County Leash, I believe Scott certainly got one of them, and other practices around the Leash Offaly will see some of those. Some of those will have presented there as well, and are now providing services, and that's no bad thing. That's a good thing. That's a short term measure. But to answer the question, there's a few things feeding into it. And one of them is, and I don't want this to be taken up the wrong way, but there's a lot more women going into GP practice now. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. But women, as we know, often have home responsibilities. And they're not. If you're running a GP practice, you're running a business. You have to run a business along with being a doctor. So it involves an awful lot of hours. And GPs tell me this the whole time. That there's the GP practice, the busy practices, they have administration, they have to have a staff, and there's a whole range of other things committed. And the piece that's missing in Ireland is that we don't have a cohort of directly employed general practitioners, ordinary GPs. In other words, if you look at Scotland, for example, and it's one that we've looked at in some other countries, that you will have a cohort of directly employed GPs providing services under the direction of a HSE manager in a primary care centre, and that gives people, GPs, the opportunity to work a 35 or 36 or 39 hour week and finish, and obviously that would facilitate an awful lot of people, so it would provide a career path that people wouldn't be looking at having to set up a business and do these inordinate amount of hours. Now if people want to do that, that's fine. That's fine and legitimate. That's the model that's used, but we don't have an alternative to that. The other point is that there are a lot of GPs now in the over 55, and if you take in Leash, we lost 9 GPs in a period of 2 years, but there was only four recruits came in. So there was, if you look at it, there was 4 retirements, and there was 5 resignations, but you're getting 4 new ones in this place. So you're down. The net result is you're down 5. What's happened in the meantime? The population increases.
I was just going to point that out, that in Leash, like back in 2002, the population stood at around 58,500. By 2022, that's up to almost 92,000, a 56% increase.
Huge.
Making a huge difference as well. Like that's really going to compound that problem.
Huge difference. Offaly has just about held its own between retirements, smaller amount of retirements and resignations, and has drawn level. But the point I'm making there is that those two factors are feeding into it. And a lot of GPs coming out of medical school will, if they don't see a career path and have to go through all the trouble, they mightn't fancy going and working in a GP practice for somebody else. Some of them emigrate abroad and get direct employment with the health services in Australia or Canada or Britain, and they see that as an option. So there needs to be other alternatives provided there. But what we would say as well, that the number of being trained, it's clear that from our pieces of research into it, from what Sinn Féin have been doing, and David Cullinan, our health spokesperson, has been doing deep dives into all of this to try and figure out what's going on, is that we need to be training more GPs, but crucially when to come out of it, ensuring that career path is there if they want it as a directly employed GP, or indeed if they want to go into general practice and set up their own business, that's fine as well. But the problem is, you see, it's a catch-22 situation. Because GPs are now overworked, some of them tell me they're exhausted. It's not seen as a viable, it's not seen as a very attractive option. So it's kind of one thing feeds into another, unfortunately, in a very negative way. Whereas if the services were better staffed, people would say, there's a better quality of life there. The hours will not be as long. It won't be as draining, because it is a very tough enough of a job. You have to deal with all sorts of cases. You have to try and be on your toes and on top gear the whole time, and meeting patients one after another, all day. It can be It can be tough enough.
Absolutely. So, and I think for a large cohort of the population, people only use the GP when they need them and they really value that service and they appreciate the complexity of it. But it can be very frustrating, you say, if you're waiting a couple of weeks. I'm going to put just kind of two listener questions to you, Brian. One person, this maybe adds another angle on some of the scale of the issue, but a texter who's remained anonymous says, "Hi, Ronan. I'm listening to your show and my son is currently studying medicine, but the cost is ridiculous. And we get no help. We just missed a Susie grant and there is no wiggle room with them." Said, "Now the money is running out and we think he won't be able to go past year four. Can Brian help with this? Because he's a fabulous potential doctor who was crippled with fees and rent and non-paying placements." Another listener has said that we need to be talking to Minister Stephen Donnelly, the Minister for Health, and not Brian Stanley. What can you do about it? So I suppose, put those questions together. We're in a year of elections. What can Sinn Féin do to change this situation?
Well, the first thing we can do is highlight. The other thing we can do is put forward alternative options. And your listener's correct about that. We're not in government, right? And of course, that's the case. But like, we've managed to change some things without being in government, such as getting the government to bring in rent tax relief for renters, which they said couldn't be done. They brought in mortgage interest relief for those who were paying excessive mortgages. They said that couldn't be done. So, you know, Sinn Féin have been able to get the government to do certain things. But I do take the point your listeners are making, and they're correct in that regard. We're not in government. But what we are doing is that, first of all, we're examining the problem, finding out how it can be solved, putting forward alternatives and pushing them hard. And that means getting public support, because Sinn Féin on their own won't do it. The Irish public need to start demanding that we get a proper public health system in place. The good news is that under Sláintecare, which we were instrumental in pushing for, which is a plan for a new health service in Ireland, new public system, that started in 2017. It has been moving too slow. To be honest, it was held up somewhat by COVID, but also it hasn't been given the political impetus that it needs. But progress has been made on that, to extend medical care cover across the population, to get some of the things that I've spoken about to you in the last 10 or 15 minutes in place. Sláintecare will address a lot of that. What we need to do is to get our foot on the accelerator, and we need to give that priority. But the issue of fees there, one of your listeners phoned in with a very interesting question. There is a problem in relation to fees for medical school, trying to keep students at college. The rents are exorbitant, and that's the reason we need rent controls. We have brought forward legislation on that a number of times. It has been rejected, snapped back by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. That's fine. They have their take on it. We have our take on it. But we need to actually solve the crisis in the private rented sector. And that's another area, that a whole area that I can go into if you want to. But the basic point there is that we need affordable accommodation for students near the campuses where they're going to college. There's a start being made on that now. There are some building projects promised at some of the various universities and colleges around the country. But again, you know, we need to move at pace with that, and we need to start getting them in place.
That's absolutely
the accommodation piece, Ronan, is actually one of the most expensive pieces. And we do need to look at how we can ease the fees as well for the
I think that would be a question, because true. I think everybody listening knows, you know, when you mention Sláintecare and maybe we can put aside COVID and say, right, the focus had to be slightly different. But again, people are hearing of this new health system that's coming and coming and coming and never coming. I think the same applies to accommodation. I'd say for that listener, it's too far down the line. I'm not laying that blame with yourself,
line.
You know, but, so it's urgent action that's needed.
One of the things that would help is that, like, we put this forward 5-6 years ago, the idea of having a rent freeze and trying to control rents, which can be done. But that can be done this year. That's something that can be done now. That's something that can be done in the next month, if there was political will there to do it. I mean, we bailed out the banks overnight. I remember being in the Dáil till 5 o'clock one morning, because we were there to bail out the banks, which I voted against at the time. But the point I'm making is that so a whole lot of things can be done on an emergency basis. We have a crisis here in GP services. You know, to address this, we need to get on top of it. And time isn't on our side because of the increase in population and the aging profile of a lot of GPs. We're putting forward a couple of practical proposals. We know there's no quick fix. I'm not going to come on your show and tell your listeners that this can be fixed by somebody clicking their fingers. It can't be. But what we can do is make a realistic start on it. I welcome the fact that there was those new GPs recruited last year, but it's not, clearly not enough. There's huge gaps. There's constituents on to me on a daily and weekly basis who cannot get into a GP practice. And that's the most basic. I've outlined the problems that cause, that's causing for the general health of the public, because it leads to bad health, but it also leads to our hospitals being clogged up with people who don't need to be there. They need to be seen in a primary care centre in the community.
Absolutely, yeah. I think maybe it's off-putting. Some people probably don't even want to enter the system there in the first place. But Brian Stanley, thank you so much for that this morning. One listener's text in as well said, the problem is getting into the GP is not the doctor. It's getting by their secretary, who think they are the doctors. They start asking you what is wrong with you, and it's none of their business. Then tell you to go to my doc or go to your A&E. That comes in from one of our listeners, that that's what's happening in their town. So are you having the same thing? Let me know. 083 3010 103. Time now for a quick break.
Saturday View on Midlands 103. With thanks to Lumclune Energy. Pioneering innovation. Powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com.
Just about 6 days ago, Taoiseach Simon Harris criticised protests outside politicians' homes, describing them as thuggery. That was against the recent protests that had taken place outside Minister for Integration Roderick O'Gorman's house. Just yesterday, protesters appeared outside Simon Harris's house. He wasn't there at the time. He was in Northern Ireland and his wife was there putting their young children to bed. And this is just the latest in a number of protests outside politicians' house. It happened with Simon Harris as his time as Minister for Health back in 2019. Also, even Leo Varadkar was subjected to the same. And as I say, that list grows and grows. Now, we do see a report in Breaking News from last year, from about October last year, said that the OPW, the Office of Public Works, spent £3.6 million on security at politicians' homes amid an upsurge in protests back then. That was, politicians were given, TDs and senators were giving a €5,000 allowance so they could improve their security for staff at their home or for their constituency offices at the time. But I say overall, the overall spend, £3.6 million on security, undoubtedly that is rising. But to get a sense of kind of what measures are in place already and maybe how the Gardaí and other security services may respond to this, I'm glad to be joined by Pat Murray. Pat is an author and he's a former detective and he's from lives in Mullingar. Very good morning, Pat.
Morning, Ronan.
Pat, I'm sure this threat for like elected representatives and politicians is something that has always been there. To what extent has it escalated?
Yeah, well, look, we can see day in, day out that there's protests at politicians' houses, you know. And in my mind, it's unacceptable for the simple reason is that it's infringing on the privacy of not just the politician, but his wife and family and maybe neighbours. So look, it extends just beyond that. But look, the law as it stands, the Criminal Justice Public Order Act 1994, there are a number of offences. Now, you have to make sure that the offence, like, you know, the crime is, it has occurred or has been broken for the Gardaí to effect an arrest. You know, there's disorderly conduct in a public place, threatening, abusive or insulting behaviour in a public place, and distribution or display in public places of material which is threatening, abusive or insulting or obscene. Now, I know, I think it was in Simon Harris's house, they hung, you know, posters or stuff on the gates and stuff like that, you know. And also, like, if you have people in balaclavas, it is threatening. So I think that the threshold for these offences would have been reached and arrests could and should have been made, you know. But look, in the overall context, in my opinion, there should be a specific offence for protesting outside, not just a politician's house, but anybody's house, that's going to cause upset, a violation of their peace or willfully obstruct their passage and that, you know. So
I've highlighted there some of the spending in 2023 was reckoned about £3.6 million spent by the OPW on security for these senators. Yeah. How? Yeah. What's the response at present? What will they be looking at now to make sure, like, or will they be giving TDs and senators and their teams more instruction, more training? Will there be more resources put in CCTV? What is the typical response when we see a threat rising?
I think myself, the government will have to make an amendment to the Criminal Justice Public Order Act to put in a provision that it is a crime to protest outside the homes of politicians or indeed anybody that causes upset, you know, or threats or you know, upsets the person's peace, you know, and I think once that is in place, the Gardaí are quite obliged then to come along and arrest people and bring them off, like, you know, where this, as it stands at the moment, there is a bit of toing and froing to see if they have actually breached the law, like, you know. So look, I think that's what's the first thing needs to be done, and I think it's really like Simon Harris, like anybody else, has his day's work done. He likes to go home and put on his slippers, I'm sure, and put his feet up and watch the telly or have a glass of wine or whatever, or play with his kids and, you know, tuck them into bed, and he doesn't want to be listening to rants and shouting outside his gate, and you know what I mean, which is uncalled for, like, you know, really, you know, he's only a wet week in the job, and just give the man a chance, and you know, you know, just, and it's not nice behaviour by people, you know.
Do we kind of console ourselves thinking, ah, this is Ireland, nothing bad will happen, that these are just people protesting?
No, because we
only have to look, we're only weeks away from the 8th anniversary of the murder, the assassination of Joe Cox, the British Labour Party, who was killed by a 52-year-old Thomas Alexander Mayer. Yeah. Again, his issue there was he was a white supremacist, and he was he had links with Nazism and far-right movements.
Yes.
In 2021, we had another politician killed in the UK, Sir David Amos, killed by a guy who claimed to be representing the Islamic State as well. I mean, that's only across the water. So how real is that threat being perceived in Ireland, do you think?
That is a real threat. And you always have the lone wolf and someone who gets something in their head to inflict injury on someone. Like, you know, I had it in Dundalk there, where we had a guy who had come from Syria on the boats to Italy, then made his way across Europe to England, and then to Northern Ireland and into Dundalk, and he stabbed a Japanese man on his way home from work one morning and killed him, and then went to attack another person, like, you know. So you do have lone wolves out there, and what I'm saying is that in respect of we have to respect our politicians. We mightn't always agree with them and we mightn't always like them, but what I'm saying is that they do a very fundamental and important job, and we have to protect them, and it should be protected by law and by the arms of the Garda Síochána. And what I'm saying is that there should be a specific offence there for protesting outside politicians' homes, and indeed anybody, like, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. And I will point out that the protests have been condemned by all political parties, that even Michelle O'Neill, the First Minister of the North, condemned with Simon Harris yesterday. But Pat, I suppose, before I let you go, you're sounding fresh and well for a man who launched your second book, was it last night, Murder at Lordship Inside the Hunt for Detective Skillers. How did that go for you?
It went extremely well. We sold over 78 books, and we actually ran out of books in Easons in Mullingar. And Fionnán Sheehan launched the book for us, and myself and Robin Schiller wrote the book. It's called Murder at Lordship, Inside the Hunt for a Detective Skiller, and it depicts the terrible murder of Adrian Donoghue and how the Gardaí pursued the killers to get them to justice. And it took us all around the world, but we got there at the end of the day. And it's a fascinating read. Anyone that has read it now has told me that it's fascinating, and there's a lot of information in the book that they weren't aware of. And you know, they said it's fascinating, and what you had to do to, you know, like, it was just pure fantastic police work, like, you know.
Absolutely, at a time, I suppose, where that gathering of evidence is becoming probably even more challenging because of all the checks and balances you have to undertake.
Well, yeah. Well, look, I had a lot of experience investigating murders and that. Like, this was an exception. It was the largest murder investigation ever in the state. And the trial itself was the longest criminal trial in Irish history. And it was a mammoth task. Now, it really pushed me to the limits, like, you know. But Adrian was one of my detectives, and I owed it to him to do a good job, a professional job, and that's what was done.
Well, absolutely. And, congratulations. As I say, it's definitely a tough read, but a wordy read for anybody listening as well. Pat Murray, author of Murder at Lordship, Inside the Hunt for a Detective's Killer and former detective, thank you so much for that this morning.
Okay, Ronan, thank you.
Now, I'm moving on now from, you know, that onto why people around the Tullamore area are shedding their clothes and getting out in public and doing so as well. Would you be willing to get your kid off for charity? Well, Funhouse Theatre Company in Tullamore managed to convince half the town to take part in its nude calendar in aid of the Midlands Hospice. The group, whose performance of Calendar Girls is on this week in the Esker Arts Centre, have immersed themselves in their characters and dedicated to follow in their footsteps and produce the calendar. Midlands 103 reporters Amelia Averis and Lily Buckley have been meeting up with the group to find out how the idea of the calendar first came to be. And here's a little snippet from that when they caught up recently.
And then the next scene is just hilarious from the get-go, like the minute it starts. Yeah. The whole place is erupting with laughter.
You definitely leave the theatre, I think, feeling uplifted and empowered. There's lots of hope throughout the show. And then, yeah, you leave on a high, hopefully.
It's based on the true story of a group of women who were based in Yorkshire. And they were in what's called the Women's Institute, which I suppose in Irish terms would have been the ICA, or the kind of Irish Country Women's Association. So quite a conservative group of women. And they would have done activities every week, like crafting and jam making and traditional things like that. So every year they used to bring out a calendar. And the calendar every year was kind of, as they say in the show, of local churches. So quite conservative things. So one of the women, her husband got leukemia. And they used to go and visit him in his hospital. And the idea is that they were going to raise money to buy a more comfortable sofa for the relatives' room in this hospital. And the idea is that they came up with that they would do a nude calendar. It would be of them doing all the stuff that they traditionally do. So the knitting and the jam making and all that. But nude. Now, I suppose it's kind of a bit tongue-in-cheek. Like, everything is kind of covered by a prop, if you like. So, they did more than buy a sofa. They raised, at one point, the figure was over £6 million sterling, and it became like a national success.
I mean, that's exactly why we went on to do the calendar, because it just fits so well with the show, the theme of the show, and it's why we approached the hospice in the first place, because we are in the process of, hopefully very shortly, breaking ground on the new Midlands Regional Hospice here in Tullamore. So, the timing of it was just perfect, really. So, yeah, they were really happy to come on board with us.
But we had a grand total of about €10 between us. And we said, sure, look, I reckon we should know better, because we know that shows cost, amateur shows, people probably don't know this, but amateur musicals could cost 60,000 upwards, 80,000, 100,000, depending on the society within the country. So we've done a lot of fundraising linked to the hospice. The new hospice will serve the counties of Leash, Offaly, Westmeath and Longford. And we have cast members from all of them regions in the show.
So the calendar, whose idea was it to be like, let's go the whole way and immerse ourselves in our characters?
I think we sat around Jay's kitchen table one Saturday morning for several hours and thrown ideas out as to what we were going to do, and then the final what is going to be put on sale is a product of that brainstorm session, really.
Last year I had a cousin that was a very similar age to me that died. He had a very aggressive sarcoma, but he was from Longford and he's a fireman in Longford, but he passed in Vincent's University Hospital in Dublin. But he had a wife at home and he had a 2-year-old child. He could never get back from Vincent's because the service wasn't available here.
Right.
So for, I think it was 11 weeks, his wife was on a recliner, like, beside his bed. And he never got to go home again, you know. So in that respect, like, that's how badly needed the service is in this region. That's, you know, for cases like that. So that's kind of part of it. Like, we're all knowing things like that. So
a compelling reason why you could support Calendar Girls there by Funhouse Theatre Company in Tullamore. It's taking place in Esker Arts Centre, has been running during the week and it's on this weekend also. Hearing great reports, a fantastic show, but keep an eye out for that Calendar Girls, for the actual calendar too. Lots of local business people and community people, pillars of the community, you'll see them like you have never seen them before in that calendar, all of course going to great causes too. Congrats to everybody involved. The listener who texted in to ask Brian Stanley about the crippling costs of having their son go through medical school has come back and said that, you know, hi Ronan, I hear what Brian is saying, but again, €110 per month rent in Dublin for my son. When they send him on placement to Galway, Waterford and Limerick, he still has to pay the Dublin rent and pay extra rent on placement with no allowances for that as well. It really is just showing you how difficult it can be to get somebody through college. And bear in mind, that listener, they're just short of qualifying for the SUSE grant. And medical college is, from what I can gather, not that cheap at all. So again, is that discouraging people from going to study in medicine in the first instance as well? And surely we can make some exemptions. We can change the rules. We can get more young people educated. We probably one of the highest standards of education globally. Surely we can do something out there. But thank you for your text as well. Loads of you texting in saying protest at politician's house is wrong. But a common theme in it all is lots of you are saying that people are not being listened to. Now, you're suggesting that going outside a politician's house is probably a step too far. But some are suggesting, well, what else can you do? And you're not, I know you're not part of those protests, but what else can people do in order to have their voices heard? Well, how about next Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, get your voice on Midlands 103 here. Tell me what the politicians are not hearing from the people of the Midlands. Let's put it all together and let's see, can we get some action on that? It's a year of elections. Now is the time for you to use your vote. Never mind, don't be protesting inside people's houses. It's time to use our votes. Let me know what you want your politicians to hear, and let's work together on that and put something out there and see what the response is. Time for me to take a quick break. After that, age gaps in relationships. Why is it different if the woman's older than if the man is older? Talk to you very, very shortly.
Saturday View on Midlands 103 with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumcluneEnergy.com.
Listeners text in to say if they can change laws that quickly just in relation to protests at the politician's house, just because it's on their doorstep now, why don't they sort out the scooter rules on our Road Traffic Act? I'm not against them. Diesel took again a hit last week due to carbon tax. The listeners saying, well, if we can change the rules and the law very quickly for carbon tax, yet we can't legislate for e-scooters or scooters on the road, how can it be done so quickly? Well, yeah, interesting point. Is that because on the doorstep? Well, these are all complex issues sometimes and very different. But again, I'd love to hear your opinion on that. 083 3010 103, a couple of minutes left there to get your view in. But to finish up today, I want to introduce you to a film called The Idea of You. And if you watched a couple of minutes of trailer, that's widely available online there. It's about Anne Hathaway playing a character who meets a young musician at the Coachella Festival in the US. And at one point, you know, it's clear that there's obviously a spark between them and things are going to move into more kind of the romantic realm. And she makes the comment that, but I'm too old for you. In the movie, Anne Hathaway plays a 40-year-old woman. The musician in question is a 24-year-old. Not really a groundbreaking age gap. I mean, if we think of Emmanuel Macron and his wife Brigitte, his former teacher, she's now 71, he's 46. So we often see quite large age gaps in very healthy relationships. But why do we look at them slightly different? And often if it's the female that's older, and words like cougar get bandied about, whereas if the roles are reversed, people almost celebrate the man and it's just seen as being a normal man and doing what men like to do, or so led to believe. To look more into the kind of psychology behind this, I'm delighted to be joined by Rory Hafford, a psychotherapist and author living in Four in Westmead. Very good morning, Rory.
Hey, Ron, how are you?
Rory, take us through this one quickly. Do we look at this a little bit differently when the woman is older, and why do we do so?
Yeah, I mean, that's the stereotypical view. Okay, so and it's, to my mind, there's very little thought goes into it. We just see this and we go, oh, that means. I think the whole thing is nonsense. I mean, you mentioned a 71-year-old and somebody said, well, you know, this woman is in love with him. And love transcends age. Age is just the number. If you love somebody, you love them. If you're attracted to them, you're attracted to them. But the big thing for me is that all throughout my life anyway, women have fought tooth and nail to elevate the way they are viewed in the world. And that is the way it should be. Absolutely. And now there's not only parity between men and women in many areas, they've actually taken over men. And bravo, I say, let that continue. But this thing knocks me sideways. Why should an older woman be frowned at for having a relationship with a younger man? It's not. Some of my friends have actually gone out with older women and had a ball of a time. A whale of a time. And there's many benefits when you get older as a woman, women are less, they're freer, they're happier, they are less consumed with the female neuroses of how they look or their body or being looked at as objects in a sexual way. All that stuff is kind of gone. And now they are free to express their self, themselves. So there is a freedom there. And certainly my mates who have gone out with older women loved it, absolutely had a ball and couldn't be less interested in what people think. But again, Ronan, from a psychological point of view, and we discussed this at length on Will's programme, there is a thing called an outside locus of control, whereby you care passionately about what people think about what you're doing. It's rubbish. Nobody really cares. Nobody cares. Firstly, you can't please everybody. And secondly, people have a right to look at things their own way, but not to tell you if you're doing something right or wrong. So you're empowering people outside yourself to make you feel one way or another about yourself. And this issue falls psychologically directly into this.
Yeah. But what about the poor man in this, maybe, who's in his 40s now, and now he realises not only are women of his own age not interested in him, now they're all looking at women 20 years younger than him. Like, surely the poor man in this is going to suffer.
Because this whole issue is raised to be looked at from the woman's point of view, and I am happy to do that. I don't think in relation to issues of love and sex and dating that you can call men poor. Oh, the poor fella. Do you know what I mean? And in relation to this is a broad spectrum look at labeling women for dating a younger man. Throw it out. Throw the whole thing out. It's nonsense. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely.
It empowers women. Women are empowered by this. But I tell you, I can't wait to see that movie.
Yeah, but that's what I was shocked. Sinead Hubble sent me on some notes yesterday and I was like, right, okay, who's playing the character? Okay, Anne Hathaway, she's not exactly old, 40. And I was like, here, come on, folks. That's not an age gap.
Yeah. Well even if it were on, Anne Hathaway is a cracking looking woman. My God, she's beautiful beyond measure. I wouldn't look at Anne Hathaway and go, oh, what age is she? I'd look at her and go, what an amazingly beautiful woman.
Absolutely, yeah. No, and I suppose that's it. It's meant to be this kind of biopic or a fan biopic of Harry Styles and Joan. But it is a constant theme we see across movies, across literature, even across TV series as well. That once it is, if the shoe's on the other foot, we don't even ask that question. We just see it as that's actually nearly the expectation. Dare I say, if you have a man who's deemed to be successful, he's got money, he's got a good career, he therefore the ultimate thing is to have a younger wife or partner. I mean, it's there everywhere in mainstream stuff.
But Ronan, times have changed and changed radically. It's now not the domain of men to be rich and successful and powerful. More and more women are coming on stream, and I've worked under the guidance of a few women in my career, powerful women, like the famous Terry Prone, for instance. Prone is an amazingly driven, intelligent, solid human being. My God, she's incredible. So now women are getting to that level where they are rich and they are powerful and they are the decision makers. But the way the whole thing is viewed and it's fed up to you causes me to stop a little, because the stereotypical view is that if an older man gets a younger woman, fair play to him. Isn't he amazing? He's a hero. And I think you said in your introduction to this, quoting from somebody else, that if an older woman gets a younger man, eyebrows are raised.
Absolutely.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And in some ways, I know this is the highlight from women, but it's almost like it could put even more pressure on some men to think that's the level they need to be at, as you say, rather than just going with what was right for you and good in a relationship as well. What I will say, because time is almost up, Rory, if you watch the last Bond movie, it is an eminently better movie because there's more female agents and proper female characters in it. It's way better than some of that muck that came out in the 80s with, whoever, anyway. Listen, Rory, I have to let you go. Thank you so much, as always, for that. Another interesting one. We'll talk to you again soon. And I'll talk to you soon again. That's it from Saturday View for today. Thank you for all your texts. Lots more to get through. And you know what? If you want to make your politicians hear what you want to hear, let us know between now and next Saturday. Come on, we'll get that word out there. Thanks to Nelly and Sinead Hubble. Lorraine is here next with Feel Good Saturday.
Saturday View, with thanks to Lumclune Energy, pioneering innovation, powering progress. LumclunEnergy.com. Midlands 103.